You're listening to the Main Event Mindset Podcast. I'm your host, Roy Flash Gordon. I'm a fitness professional, pro wrestler, and coach, and I created this podcast to help people get off their asses, become their future fearless selves, and start living the lives they've always wanted. Each week, I bring topics and thoughts to the table that will not only help you redesign your mindset and step into the main event of your life, but also help you become a better person, not only for yourself, but for the people in your life and this world we live in. Hey gang, thank you for tuning in again to Main Event Mindset. If you haven't yet done so, go ahead and click that subscribe button so you never miss an episode. And if you're ready to get over your fears into your new life or that new project, whatever you've been working on, check out the link in the description for my free guide to take you through some prompts to work through those fears. Today, continuing my interview series with professional wrestlers from my life. Today, I'm going to interview a man by the name of GPA, one of the top guys in Chicago, just had some great exposure on AEW and even a little bit of exposure before that on when his engagement to his now fiance, also professional wrestler, Lainey Luck, made it on SportsCenter. So GPA, as always, has a lot of stuff to say, truly a student of the game and a great example for personal development. Let's see what he has to say. Here's my interview with GPA. Here with my buddy GPA. How you doing, man?
Doing pretty well.
Oh yeah, dude. Well, this is our second time doing this. And as we discussed before, I'm going to try to do it right this time and see where you are in the world these days. First couple of questions I got for you. I wanted to know, what wrestler, if you can pick one, inspired you to become a wrestler? And then what was that that becoming, that transformation like for you when you first started?
So I guess with questions like that, it's always kind of boiled down to two guys with me. So from an in-ring perspective, it was always Bret Hart. He just had that kind of legitimacy to him. You could never see through what he was doing. Like, he just had just kind of his own style. Like, he wasn't over the top, but he was still very compelling. He was just very, very sportsmanlike in the way that he went about, you know, his matches. So from an in-ring perspective, it was always Bret. And then from a showmanship perspective, it was The Undertaker, because like, as soon as that guy came on my TV screen, like, I didn't know what I was looking at, but I knew that I wanted to see more and figure out what this whole wrestling thing was about. Like, he just encapsulated the character side of wrestling for me. So yeah, it's kind of a split answer. So I'd say Bret and Undertaker were the guys, you know, that really just made me have to pursue this in a lot of different ways.
Yeah. Good answer. And I definitely not surprised at the Bret Hart bit. One bit at all with you as far as your, you know, your technical aspects. And I feel like I could say the same thing about you. And I think a lot of guys would agree with that for sure. And then the second part of that question, what was getting your start like?
Getting my start, it was interesting because, you know, I mean, growing up in Chicago, especially with where Chicago is now, you kind of think like, oh, well, you know, you can go anywhere, you can learn 50 different places, 50 different styles. But like, you know, this was around maybe 2009, 2010. And the options were actually pretty limited in terms of like how you could get your start in wrestling in the Chicago area. Cause I did a Google search for like Chicago wrestling schools and only two places came up. It was PCW and Windy City. And Windy City had this you had to basically pay to play kind of thing. Like, you couldn't look in on anything. You couldn't get any kind of up close firsthand perspective. Like, you just had to pay the full rate up front and then you could get invited in to, you know, take your classes, see how it worked and all that. And PCW was very casual about it. They were like, hey, you know, come on, you know, watch the classes, come as many times as you want, kind of get a feel for the place, talk to the guys, whatever. So yeah, it was kind of a no brainer to me. I just had to take what I could get at that point.
Yeah.
I knew that it probably wasn't going to go from like PCW to the WWE, but you know, it seemed like a place that could at least give me a foundation and sort of give me the stepping point to get to the next phase of my career. So yeah, it was actually kind of a streamlined process. It's like, okay, go here, learn what I got to learn and then go from there.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like the first time we talked about this, you had a good story about two guys doing Ric Flair versus Hogan. Can you just say that again?
Yeah. So I'm pretty sure it was the very first class that I ever sat in on. You know, so I pull up in just this like normal suburban neighborhood that, you know, I was expecting to pull up to like the performance center or like the WCW power plant or something, mm-hmm. just a big warehouse with, you know, burly men slamming into each other. But, you know, I pull in and it's just this, you know, four-way intersection in Oak Park or Oak Lawn or something. And
yeah,
so I had no idea what I was doing, where I was, but as soon as I stepped out of the car, I'm looking around trying to figure things out. And I hear like bumps and yelling and grunting and groaning coming from some area near me. And so I walk over across the street and there's a garage where two guys are having a little match, and there's the trainer sitting off to the side. So I go in, just kind of give a wave and a nod, and I go sit to the side. So the instruction for that particular class, it was just two guys and the trainer. And the trainer said, like, okay, for this exercise, one of you guys is Ric Flair, the other guy is Hulk Hogan. You can't talk about anything. You just have to go in there and do it. Just call it on the fly as Ric Flair and Hulk Hogan. And they did okay. Like,
yeah.
a couple decent Flair-esque and Hogan-esque things. But like in my mind, I already had the whole match like going in my head. I was like, okay, we're going to lock up. I'm going to do this. I'm going to work the crowd. I'm going to come back together, do this, do that. Like in my head, I pretty much knew how it should have gone. And, you know, I was watching them do it and I was like, could be better. But of course, I'm not going to say anything or speak up because I'm not even signed up at that point. I'm just Joe Schmo off the street. But, it was just, it was sort of letting me know like, okay, even though physically I don't know if my body can deal with all this, I know that at least mentally, like, I'm prepared for some of the stuff that they might throw at me. So there's a little preview into what was to come.
Definitely. I think, you know, at that point in your career, like still a fan moving into being, I do think there's a lot of validity and fans can probably know a little bit about, you know, if this is music, if this is theater, like how things could go, should go, just without the technical aspect. So definitely wouldn't discount that. And we've all been fans at some point. We've seen lots of people come in and use that mind or that ability. And I don't know, it kind of worked for them once they're on the performance side of things a little bit. And there's plenty of fans who need to not say anything ever again. There's that too. Another question for you. So I guess this is the big question of the podcast. How has, obviously there's an aspect of putting yourself out there in this wrestling thing, literally, and in just the pursuit of it, how has that ability grown for you and how has that shown up in your life outside of wrestling?
It's funny because I'll kind of have these conversations, you know, whether it's with Lainey or family or whoever, like, in a way, wrestling is almost the only way that I put myself out there. Cause like I've wondered at times if I didn't have wrestling, you know, what would I be doing to give myself that emotional release or that creative release? And like, I really don't know the answer to that. So, you know, in a lot of ways, like pursuing wrestling has allowed me to take like the aspects of myself that would have been hidden without wrestling and just put them out there for, you know, worldwide consumption. And there's really no issue with me doing that because it's in the form of wrestling. You know, if I had to go, you know, give a speech to just a random crowd, or if I had to go like take part in a play in a park somewhere, like I'd be a nervous wreck and I don't think I could do it. But in taking aspects of myself and presenting them through the prism of wrestling, it just feels very organic, feels very comfortable, because wrestling is something that I love. So I think that it's kind of been the perfect storm because in real life, I'm a pretty reserved guy. Like, you know, I've worked with people, gone to school with people that probably couldn't tell you three things about me because I'm just not like that forthright with my personality or whatever. But, you know, there's just something about the world of wrestling that kind of gives me a comfort level both with the environment and with myself. And I think that, you know, when you have that confidence in your ability to do something and your surroundings themselves, you know, it just sort of allows you to open up as much as you're willing to do so. So, and then once I got into wrestling, and, you know, obviously I've been in it for quite a while now. I think once you've been in the ring and been in front of people, and whether it's the wrestling itself or the cutting the promos or doing the entrances or whatever, I think once you've had that much attention put on you, it kind of takes the pressure of real life off in a lot of ways. Cause it's like, you know, if I can walk out in front of 1,000 people in my underwear and jump around and, you know, extend myself physically, emotionally, whatever, you know, then it's really no issue to like walk into a room and, you know, just feel normal or go to a party or anything. Like there's almost no other social aspect that becomes quite as intimidating once you've pursued something like professional wrestling. So I think that wrestling has allowed me to just kind of open up in all ways. Like now that I know I can do this, there's really nothing else that I'm very intimidated by. I know I can pretty much do anything else, at least like socially, that I want to do.
Yeah. Big time. I think that's huge. And I really believe in the pursuit of something that you might qualify as your dream or anything, even not anything that's hard, but something that means that much to you, like pursuing it and doing it well, and maybe not necessarily, you know, going as far as you have wanted to go yet, but doing something that you can be happy with and proud of, like it gives you so much more like everywhere else. So it's really cool to see you do that. And it's so funny to me that I've seen how you can be wrestling, and then I talked to you like the next day at practice and you wouldn't have guessed. And it was just like,
hello, good to see you. Blah, blah, blah.
And then wrestling is like, boom, 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 boom. You know, it's crazy. It's crazy. And I don't know. I don't think I know anyone like you like that in wrestling, you know, and I'm sure there's more folks like that, but you're like a great example of like, wait till you see this guy go, you won't recognize him, you know, and it's completely cool to be, you know, out real life Jeff and then wrestling GPA. It's really cool to see. You mentioned Laney, and I hate to lose this part of the podcast as well. But you guys have been engaged for quite some time now, and you did it in a super fun way. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. So we've been together for about 3 years now. And personally, that was always kind of my time frame for just hypothetically when I was thinking about like, oh, once I'm in a relationship, you know, when will I know that it's, you know, time to take it to that next level? And I always thought like, you know, about 3 years, you should know if it's going somewhere or not. And, you know, just with being in my 30s now and with us hitting the 3-year mark and having no problems, nothing to write home about. In fact, we got through like the worst of times together. You know, we were together during the pandemic, so we were stuck in the house all day, every day, and still no problems, no crosswords or anything. So I knew that it was time coming out of, obviously we're still in the pandemic, but like coming out of that whole experience, I knew it was, you know, I'm not going anywhere. She's not going anywhere. So,
yeah.
So then it just became a question of how do I do it? And so, I basically had like two scenarios for proposing in my head. And, the first one was just a standard, you know, like, oh, we'll go to a nice dinner. We'll take a walk by the beach. We'll do, you know, just something kind of cutesy and romantic, and I'll just find the perfect moment and I'll pop the question. And, and I was leaning towards that, but I kind of did a little like kind of a focus group sort of thing with friends. And I just sort of put it out there, especially to my already married or engaged friends.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of put it out there like, okay, so I have, you know, this sort of standard idea. And then I was thinking, you know, well, we're both wrestlers. We both love wrestling. We met through wrestling. So like, should I do some sort of wrestling proposal? And I don't know. I always find that kind of cliche, especially if it's like on a show, because we've seen that done, you know, 20 times.
More times than we should have.
And, you know, and there's all kinds of stuff that can go wrong or just, I don't know. So doing something wrestling related didn't really appeal to me too much. But I mean, to a man, everybody that I presented the scenarios to, they were all like, no, you got to do it with wrestling. It's got to be like, you know, at a practice or just something. Like, it has to be wrestling. It can't just be normal. And so I thought about it more and more. And I was like, because at that point, we'd been practicing every weekend just by ourselves. We weren't, you know, we were just trying to be cautious and, you know, sticking to just me and her during the pandemic and all that. So I figured, well, that's kind of our time together. It's something that we're both passionate about. We both love doing it. We do it privately. So I figured, you know, I guess that can be the time. So, you know, so I planned out, because we had our anniversary weekend back in April. So I figured, okay, so we'll do like the regular romantic stuff, and then we'll slip in a practice in there. And then it's during the practice when I'll go ahead and pop the question. So, luckily it all went off without a hitch. I got the ring a couple weeks before that, and just had to go about hiding it and, you know, making sure not to let myself slip up and just go ahead and blurt it out there before it actually happened.
Yeah. But,
so we stayed real nice hotel downtown. Nice. And then we went off to the suburbs for our practice. And I had probably the most nerve-wracking part was I had to leave my car in a downtown Chicago parking garage. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to bring the ring into the room because, you know, she could go digging through the bags or the, you know, closets or wherever I might have hid it. So I just had to leave it in the car. The night. And I figured, like, you know, this will be the one night that my car finally gets broken into. And digging around, they find the ring. Oh man, jackpot! And they go
score big.
But fortunately, nothing happened. So, we got to practice, and I set up a little fake spot for us to run. You know, we went over it a couple times. Like, okay, I'll shoot you to the corner, up and over, drop down, roll, da 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 da. So we had it all planned out, and shot her off into the corner. She did the up and over. I dropped my knee and couldn't have gone more perfectly. I didn't practice it. Didn't really even think about it prior to the spot itself. Like, I don't think even the night before I had the spot in mind. I just figured I got to do something that'll get her to turn around so that I have that like 2-3 seconds to grab the ring and drop to my knee. So I think we called the spot. We kind of separated for a second. I think I pretended to go get a drink of water or something. And as I was doing that, I grabbed the ring from like my bag or something, stuck it in my pocket. And then we got back in the ring. If I had to do it 10 times, I don't think I could have done it quite as smoothly as it went. and as it happens, we always record the spots that we do. So, you know, it didn't look suspicious to have the camera set up.
Yeah.
You know, because it's like, oh yeah, we'll just record this and run it back and whatever. So, you know, so we had the camera going, you know, had the ring, pulled off the spot, everything went perfectly. She was totally surprised, went off without a hitch. And then, you know, afterward, I was thinking to myself, like, okay, so we'll post this. Our family will think it's cute. Like, a wrestling friend will be like, oh yeah, this will be, you know, it'll get like the old, you know, 50 likes and, you know, a few shares and whatever. And so, like, pretty much right afterward, Lainey posted it to social media, and it was like wildfire. Like, it got picked up by everybody. I think I want to say Bleacher Report was the first one to retweet it, and they've got a real big following. So, like, you know, they spread it, and then all of a sudden we're getting comments from Naomi and Mick Foley and just any name you could think of. They were all of a sudden either liking it or commenting or retweeting or whatever. And then the biggest one, shortly after it started to spread, was Lainey got a DM from SportsCenter, like the actual Instagram, the official SportsCenter Instagram account. They hit her up being like, hey, we saw this video. We think it's really cool. Do you mind if we put it into one of our little proposal montages? And so like, yeah, of course, SportsCenter. So, you know, so she went ahead and gave them permission. And I think it was later that day or the next day, the official SportsCenter Instagram had our proposal was the first one in the little slideshow of proposals that they had. So if you're scrolling, like, you'll see me and her like front and center on the sports Instagram. So it was crazy. You know, never in my wildest dreams did I think it would spread quite as much as it did, and, you know, gave us a nice little nice little run of social media attention. So it was real nice. It all worked out really well.
That's super cool, man. It's a great story. I'm like, I remember seeing the video and like her, like she like came around hot and I'm just like, oh, this looks like a messed up spot. I wonder what's going on. Just like, he's doing it. He's doing it. And it killed me, man. It's a really great idea. Super cool. Great setup. And I also appreciate that you did a bunch of romantic stuff before. And if for whatever reason it was like, it's coming soon, I know it is, like, and you guys are driving away from downtown around all the romantic stuff and going to fucking practice, that she's just like, well, I guess it's not coming. And you're all of a sudden there. Like, it had to be a fantastic surprise. So great job getting that done, dude.
Yeah, I guess I still don't quite know if she knew it was coming or not, but yeah, you're right. I mean, as soon as we're driving to, you know, the 5-star swap part in Villa Park, I don't think, you know, anybody in their mind has like, oh, my most romantic moment is coming as we're driving to the swap part. Like,
yep. Yeah, how it works out. And for anyone,
I should say that it's funny, even though I say that, I was involved in a match where the guy proposed to his fiance or his girlfriend after.
Oh, yes. Oh, I remember that day. We don't have to talk about any other aspects of it. I remember that day, though. If you guys didn't know, we wrestle in garages, both industrial and home garages, the back of people's houses, storage units, swap malls, of course, the standard bar, in addition to all the other places that are more appropriate to wrestle at. Good times, man. Good times. And a couple more questions for you. One is, I guess I framed it as failure before, but it doesn't necessarily need to be failure. It can be adverse time. So what's a story of a failure, adverse time, or whatever that you turned around and made better for yourself within wrestling? And like, I guess, lessons you might have learned from it.
Yeah, I mean, I could almost draw upon kind of recent examples because like getting into wrestling, the end game was always to reach the highest level, you know, to sign a contract with a major company, make millions of dollars, main event WrestleMania. Like, you know, I always had my sights set, you know, as high as they could go. And like, you know, obviously things can happen at any point, but specifically for WWE, because that, you know, growing up, that was the place to be. And it was pretty much the only game in town when I started. So, you know, that was always the end game. And then within the past 6 months, year, not that it's official, but like word came down that WWE is no longer looking for people like me, basically. They're not looking for undersized, over 30 independent wrestlers. And, you know, they might as well have said, we're not looking for GPA. But, you know, it was that specific. Like, they were just on the nose, like, okay, you, everything you are, we don't want you anymore. So, like, you know, it really brought me down for a minute because, you know, obviously the world of wrestling is very different now from when I started. And there's a lot of places to go, a lot of, you know, avenues to take, a lot of really fulfilling places to be and money to make and all that. So, like, you know, I don't have quite the myopic view of success that I once did, but at the same time, there's still kind of always that part of you that thinks, okay, I got to get to WWE because that's the tippy top. Like, you know, obviously I'll take other things, but I want to get there because, you know, to people from our generation, they see that as the Land of Oz or Broadway or whatever. So, you know, to hear that door was closed, you know, it brought me down. It made me think like, okay, what am I doing this for at this point? You know, I'm not getting any younger. You know, I look around the independent scene, everybody is friggin' 18, 20 years old. Like, you know, there's all these, you know, young kids on the rise, and, you know, I'm still kind of spinning my wheels in a certain, to a certain extent. But I think that's when I had to kind of understand, like, even though that might have been the original goal, if I really evaluate things now, it's not necessarily still the goal. And, I think it's just sort of a habit to fall back into that, like, okay, I got to get signed by WWE and that is what will be success. But you know, we both know people that have made it to WWE who are not happy, who are not mm-hmm. emotionally fulfilled. They might be financially fulfilled, but I've never been a particularly financially driven person. Like I want to be comfortable, but I don't need everything. And, you know, the, to see AEW come up, you know, to see the independent scene really start to thrive, like, you know, there's so many creatively fulfilling and even financially fulfilling avenues now. So it's funny because shortly after that edict came down from WWE and I got really down and I started questioning, you know, why am I doing this? What am I going for? I got hit up by AEW just to do extra work while they were in Chicago.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was a really, really historic time for them. It was the return of CM Punk and, you know, just all this like all this really, really amazing stuff happened in that week or 2 weeks that I was there. And it just it was so much more like, I guess, fulfilling than anything I'd ever done with WWE, you know, because we'd both been there for extra work and you're just, you know, you're shunned off to a corner. Don't look at anybody. Don't say anything. Don't touch this. Don't do that. And, you know, it's like, yeah, it's cool to be there, but you can tell that you're lower than nothing, you know, like you're, not, you know, you're not important. You're, if you get thrown any kind of a bone, like be thankful. And
it's like, how can we show you that you are less and even less important than you think we think you are? Like, that's like how it is.
Like, you know, you'll get nice catering food and you'll get a little paycheck at the end, but otherwise, like, you're not going to have a whole lot to show for it. And with AEW, it's like you show up and they're like, hey man, you got your gear? Like, yeah, we'll give you a match. We'll give you two matches. We'll give you, you know, they try to find things for you to do. Like they're, you know, they don't just bring you in to have you sit there and, you know, be a warm body against the wall. Like they bring people in with the intent of giving them ring time and giving them exposure. And like, it was just such a different world from anything you'd expect out of a major multi-million dollar corporation. So, you know, to see that that avenue is at least to see that that door is at least a little bit cracked open, and then to know that, you know, there's so many levels even beneath that, because there was a day where I did AEW during the day and then I had a Freelance Underground show that night, so I went there, did the Underground show afterward, and then they had a GCW show. Actually, I think it was technically Black Label, but GCW was like mixed in with them right after Underground, and man, they were packed wall to wall in that building. Like the people were just screaming from start to finish. The people were treating all the guys that were coming through the curtain like they were freaking The Rock. Like it was just this incredible energy, and it was so unlike anything you would see even at the WWE level. Like the you're just not going to see that sort of energy in any respect, like, you know, at that level. So just to see that there's so much yet to be gained emotionally and in a lot of other ways beneath WWE just sort of gave me this sort of new lease on life when it came to my career. Because, you know, I easily could have taken that shut door from WWE and said, all right, well, you know, I tried, it didn't work, and now it's time to see what else is out there in life. But it's like, I know, just knowing myself, that there's nothing short of wrestling that's going to keep me as fulfilled as pursuing wrestling is. Cause it's not even really about the end game in wrestling. It's so much more about the journey, you know.
It's
every next step, it's every next show, it's every next road trip, it's every next, you know, bit of communication or contact with the next guy, the next company, whatever it is. Like just that journey itself. And you hear that from guys that have made it. You know, they always reminisce about the old days when they were driving for 8 hours for $30 and eating at gas stations and all that stuff. Like they always long for those days. So I've, you know, in realizing that I'm still kind of in the fun part of the wrestling journey, it's given me a better appreciation for where I'm at, and not so much any type of regret for where I'm not, I guess.
Oh yeah. I think the memories formed during those times, during the come up, when times are hard and you look back on them fondly, but during, it's like, man, this sucks. I wish I was teleported to the building, Russell, and teleported right back home, you know. But I hear that, and you saying that it's about the journey. it resonates with me because the first time we talked like this, I was in a very different place of wrestling, like not knowing if I was going to do it again. And I've since obviously decided to pursue that again. And thanks to you and a lot of part, and as far as helping me get prepared as well and keeping me going in the upper position so I can get some fucking bookings out here. But like, I don't know what this means for me. I know I love it though. And I get something from the journey and, you know, we'll see where it goes. And seeing you on AEW was like, fuck yeah. Like Jeff's in the game, you know, like, yeah, extra work. Yeah. It's like, you know, like you said, a cracked door, but it's a cracked door, you know, that's way better than, I guess the state that you were in right before it. So I was really happy to see you there and happy that, you know, it can get you some nice forward momentum. And honestly, especially with your mindset about wrestling, you're right. Like in the mix of like stepping into like that next phase, like plenty more in the tank as well, I think.
Yeah, I hope so. And, you know, wrestling is, it's always been such a, you know, such a mercurial business where, you know, you could have a great match and think, oh, this is the best thing in the world. I'm so happy. I never want to do anything else. And then you have a bad match in front of six people and you're like, man, this is stupid. I need to fucking go to school. I need to, you know, reconnect with my family. I need to, you know, reevaluate. And, but yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, I've reached a point now where even the bad times, you know, I'm understanding like, okay, this isn't great. This isn't ideal, but you know, there could be something right around the corner. And
yes,
it was always kind of a pipe dream when you were just looking at WWE, you know, cause you're watching them sign, you know, 22 year old college football players and mm-hmm. bodybuilders. And you're like, well, maybe they'll want me too. But you know, now it's mm-hmm. like, you know, okay, now there's a company that's actually looking for wrestlers that appreciates the art of pro wrestling. And if, you know, even short of that, there's plenty of indie companies that have a ton of buzz, ton of fanfare. Yes. And yeah, so there's just, you know, there's so much more to the pursuit of success in wrestling than just WWE. And I think for everybody that realizes that, you know, things become a lot more fun and colors are a lot brighter at that point.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I have one more question for you, and it is, taking wrestling out of it, what would you say to any person who has not kind of pursued the thing that's kind of like wrestling for them? So you pursued wrestling. I think you have a leg up on everybody who says they want to do a thing and then never do it. So what would you tell that person who has something that's like wrestling to them and they have not yet done it and it doesn't look like they're going to do it?
It's funny. It makes me think of, so there's a podcast that I listen to, and one of the episodes was him just taking questions. It's called the Blind Boy podcast. And he was taking questions from his listeners, and they were asking something about basically like the pursuit of happiness in life. And, you know, how do you find that happiness and so on and so forth. And his stance on it was that in life, there really is no such thing as like steady state happiness. Mm. Like there's moments of happiness. Like there's, you know, plenty of times where you are happy, but it's just not a reasonable expectation to think that you're just going to reach, you're going to do A, B, and C, and then from then on, you're going to be happy forever, you know? And that kind of applies to what we're talking about with like getting to WWE. Like, I think at least I know in my mind, maybe in yours too, there was that thought of like, okay, I'll put in the work, I'll get signed to WWE, and then I'll be happy for the rest of my life from that point forward.
Yeah.
Nothing will ever be bad. I'll never have a bad day. Like, you know, and it's just, you know, it's not a reasonable scenario, not a reasonable expectation. And his point was that even though there is no such thing as true constant happiness, there is such thing as fulfillment. Because when you look back on times where you thought you were happy, you were actually working toward, you were filled with purpose. You had something you were working towards. You had something you were trying to do. And when you achieved, you know, aspects of that on that journey, you felt fulfilled, you felt happy. And so, you know, that's really what it's about, is it's about finding purpose. And if you have something that you're passionate about in your life, it doesn't matter what it is, but as long as it's something that you can occupy your time with, that you can devote, you know, your personal journey towards, then you're living a life, you know, worth living, you know, because And it literally could be anything. It could be you want to build the best stamp collection in history, or you want to become the president of the United States, or whatever. Like, as long as you have something that you can actively work towards day after day, week after week, then, you know, you'll reach a point where you realize, okay, you know what? I'm living the life that I want to live.
Yes.
And if you just sort of go about your days with, you know, no aim, no purpose, you know, it's really easy to kind of lose yourself, especially if you get into kind of a dead end job where you're just going through the motions every day. You're not doing anything that fulfills you personally. You know, I think it's really easy to lose yourself after a while, because then you look up and all of a sudden 10 years have gone by, you know, your youth is gone, your health is gone, your options are gone.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, shoot, I guess I'll figure out what to do tomorrow. But it's like, you know, your long-term goals are flying out the window at that point. So I think it's really important as soon as you can in life. You know, obviously it's easier for some than others. Like, we found wrestling and athletics and stuff, but like, as soon as you can in life, you want to find out what it is that brings you that happiness and what it is that you can put work in towards. And then once you find that thing, it's important to hang on to it. Yes. Don't be discouraged. People tell you, like, oh, that's stupid, you shouldn't be focusing on that, or, oh, you should get a real big boy job, work in an office, whatever. Like, you know, don't ever lose sight of what makes you personally happy, because you're not living your life for anybody else but yourself. And, you know, to find what that is the first big step. And then, you know, putting in the work and doing whatever it takes to achieve whatever that thing might be is kind of the next step after that. And then it doesn't matter. It could take 6 months, could take 6 years, could take 60 years, life. But it'll be, yeah, it could be, you know, could be a forever kind of thing, but it doesn't really matter, because it'll always be something that fills you with purpose and something that gives your life purpose. And I think that's kind of the most important thing, is just having something, having that one thing that, you know, keeps you going. Doesn't matter what it is, but, you know, if you find that, then I think you're ahead of the game.
So. Hell yeah, man. Well said. It was the your options are gone thing for me that made me be like, oh shit, let me go do more now. Yeah, you know. Yeah. I think it's again, well said, beautifully said. The journey truly is everything, and just knowing that you have that and pursuing that, it's a richness thing, right? The folks that don't get to do that, or end up in that dead end job and just stay there for 10 years. It's like, obviously you can get through life like that, and because billions and billions of people have, but like, there's a level of richness that you could have that could bring you, you know, maybe it's a little bit less money, but like, you're doing it, and you'll find that the need for money or the need for any of that other shit that you get with your dead end job, that it's a lot less, and the happiness you have brings you a lot more. So I appreciate your perspective on that, man.
Yeah. Cause it's, you know, and you could even sort of look at it as just like, take an individual day, for instance. If you're doing something you enjoy that day, the day flies by, you know. But if you're at work, or if you're just sitting around the house not doing anything, the day just drags on forever and ever and ever. And I think that concept can apply to your life too. You know, if you pursue something that you're really passionate about, you know, you could go your whole life and feel like it went by in a day, you know. Yeah. But if you're just sort of spinning your wheels, you're going to live a long and very unfulfilling life. So, you know, it's just kind of, it's your choice at that point. If you know what it is, found it, you're just waiting to pursue it. You know, today's the day to start pursuing.
Today is the day. Great way to put a cap in it, man. I appreciate your time. I am very, very happy for you, you know, finding your place in wrestling, and just see things going up and up for you and Lainey. Super cool to see. I look forward to continuing to practice with you both, and continue my journey in this thing as well. I hope you have a great rest of your day, and thanks for coming out, man.
Yeah, thank you.
Of course. And that is it for my interview with Mr. GPA. And I had a fun time with that one. We actually did this interview twice because the first recording didn't go so hot. And I was really happy to get a chat with him again because he had some great updates in his life, some great stuff that really enriched his story. And you would have heard in the first interview that GPA was very instrumental in being really one of the first people that encouraged me to get back into the ring, let me know I had a lot in the tank, and the respect that I have for that man is immense. He helps me every Saturday at wrestling practice as I get back into this thing. You heard in the interview, I don't know how much I got left in the tank as far as, or how much interest really I have in professional wrestling, but I stand by the fact that it has given me so much in my life and really is assisting me on my next journey. I'm so happy to hear from GPA that wrestling is still providing so much for him, and he still has so far that he can go. It's a real exciting thing. It's a beautiful thing. And today, if there's any takeaway, it's that the journey is absolutely everything. The journey is where the development happens, and the journey is really where a lot of the reward lies. So let's keep it moving forward in honor of that journey. If you enjoyed this episode, please give it a rating, review, all that good stuff. You know the jazz. And once again, if you're looking to get over that hump and into your life, and that free guide just ain't enough, make sure you reach out to me on Instagram at Roy Flash Gordon. We'll see if my 12-week coaching program might be a good fit for you. Thanks again for listening. Talk soon.